It's 8:06. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's Thursday, March 19th. Currently 46 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Under mostly sunny skies, we've got 43 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Thursday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back. We're in the midst of this historic heat wave, and that's going to mean those hot temperatures are only going to get hotter as we go into the next couple of afternoons. So as we look at your forecast in Park City, lots of sunshine, temperatures jumping into the mid-70s for high temperatures, way above where we should be for this time of the year. The Heber Valley, we're looking at temperatures climbing into around the 80-degree mark for us this afternoon with lots of sunshine, just very warm conditions here as we go throughout the last official day of the winter season. As we look at your forecast, heading into your Friday, of course, that is the first day of spring as we have the spring equinox that occurs at 8:46 in the morning. Well, we're definitely talking about spring temperatures, really more like late spring, early summer temperatures out there. Lots of sunshine expected for us as we go throughout your Friday with those highs in the mid-70s, mid to upper 70s for us in Park City. We're talking about low to mid-80s for high temperatures in the Heber Valley as we go into your Friday afternoon. Just amazing warmth, temperatures some 20 to 30 degrees above average for this time of the year. Heading into the weekend, we'll start off with those very warm conditions, highs once again back into the mid-70s for us in Park City, and we'll have those high temperatures in the lower 80s in the Heber Valley, again, with lots of sunshine. Your Sunday features sunshine, but we are tracking a cold front that's going to move through. It will come through dry with just a couple of high clouds here and there, but it will start to knock our temperatures back. So we're talking highs only in the low to mid-60s for us in Park City, with highs only around 70 in the Heber Valley. As we go into next week, we're going to be talking about some slightly cooler temperatures, but we're talking instead of 20 to 30 degrees above average, these temperatures will only be about 10 to 15 degrees above average. But still, it is a cool down. We'll go from temperatures that will be in the mid-70s in Park City to highs only in the upper 60s to near 70 as we go into the first half of next week in Park City. Meanwhile, in the Heber Valley, we'll take those temperatures from the low to mid-80s to highs only into the low to mid-70s as we go into the beginning of next week. That's the latest on your forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
And taking a look in the backcountry, where a special avalanche bulletin has been issued. I have Bo from the Utah Avalanche Center. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me. Yeah, like you said, we've got a special avalanche bulletin issued right now statewide. And that is due to this record heat wave that we're seeing that Cedric just mentioned. This is really unusual for this time of year. And when we have unusual weather events like this, we tend to see unusual avalanche conditions develop in the backcountry. What we're worried about is as the warm temperatures influence the snowpack and start to put a large amount of wet liquid water, melt water down through the snowpack, that water can pool on various interfaces throughout the snowpack and cause the release of large wet slab avalanches. We haven't seen overnight freezing temperatures in the last day, and the window for safe backcountry travel is really narrow this morning. I mean, people need to be out there essentially right now and planning to exit the mountains quite early as well. We do expect that this is gonna be going through the weekend, through Sunday. You know, when we start to see the cool down, we'll see the potential decrease. But right now, the actual riding conditions are quite poor. So the risk is high and the reward is especially low. If people are looking for good turns in the mountains, the ski area and On Piece is actually the best riding you can find right now. Otherwise, you know, we've seen people all over town riding their mountain bikes and starting the transition into spring and summer. So just for now, avoiding avalanche terrain, avoiding runout zones of larger avalanche paths, even at low elevations. And as conditions evolve, people can always check back here or visit our website at utahavalanchecenter.org.
Yeah, it seems like once the ski resorts close, we always seem to get a storm or three. Given what's happening to the snowpack now, though, what would that mean, say, you know, mid-April?
Well, that's a good question. You know, this warmth is going to send a lot of water through the snowpack, like I said, and that will create a more homogeneous snowpack. And we could see the layers within our snowpack that have produced avalanches in the past gain quite a bit of strength. And in that case, once we see these late spring storms, we're really just going to be worried about avalanches breaking at the new snow, old snow interface. So that will just depend how much snow we see and how much wind blows. But again, you know, we're going to stay on top of it. We're planning to forecast through the rest of the month and even into early April. So if we do see a winter-like storm come late in the spring, we'll be on top of it and sharing information for people.
Okay, Bo, thanks so much.
Thanks, Leslie. Bye-bye.
Well, a reminder that UDOT crews will be closing the left lane of eastbound I-80 near mile marker 149. That's the Silver Creek area there in Summit County. Today for data equipment installation, the closure will be in place this morning between 9 and 11. And again, you should plan for minimal delays. Also, a big thank you to everyone who helped make our winter pledge drive such a huge success. If you did request a thank you gift when you made your pledge donation, please plan to come visit us to pick up that gift. We're going to be opening the doors of KPCW on Tuesday, March 24th between 9 a.m. and 2 p.m. or Wednesday, March 25th between 2:30 and 6:30 p.m. Again, if you need to make other arrangements, not a big deal. Just give Joe a call at 435-649-9004. Well, stay tuned. Coming up this morning in just a minute, we'll be checking in with Summit County Councilmember Candace Hart. And later on, from the Early Childhood Alliance Director, Kristen Schultz, phoning in. Finally, pianist Rich Wyman and Mike Rogers will be telling us more about the final two acts of Dueling Pianos in Park City, taking place the next two Sundays. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio. Today's guests include geneticist, entrepreneur, and the CEO of Genero, Dr. Adrian Wolfstein, to discuss his new book on the future of species. Then science journalist Rebecca Boyle talks about her recent article published in Scientific American about puzzling objects called little red dots and what they might reveal about the formation of the first galaxies, possibly even the earliest supermassive black holes. All of that coming up on Cool Science Radio, of course, heard every Thursday from 9 to 10. Taking a look now at some local news, the Wasatch Back's real estate market closed out the year with one of its strongest years on record. KPCW's Christine Weller reports that it logged almost $6 billion in sales.
The Wasatch Back ended 2025 with the second highest real estate sales volume in history. The $5.75 billion in combined single-family home and condo sales was just behind the 2021 COVID-19 pandemic era peak. According to a Park City Board of Realtors report, 2025 single-family home sales were up 26% year-over-year in the Wasatch Back, totaling over $3.5 billion. Multiple Listing Service Board President Grady Kohler said the increase wasn't from selling more units, which were up 6%, but from the rise in home prices.
We jumped from an average price of 1.6 to almost 2 million as a median sales price. That's about a 19% increase. If you compare that against the U.S. average, the U.S. went up about 1.6%.
The trend is similar for the condominium market. Sales across Summit and Wasatch counties increased 20% to almost $1.7 billion, despite 8% fewer condos sold. The average price for a condo was around $1.8 million. New construction, including Jordanelle Reservoir Area development, was a hotspot for sales. Kohler said other markets, particularly Camas, struggled. Following a nationwide trend, buyers skewed younger while sellers were older. And that younger buyer was increasingly active in Old Town Park City, marking a demographic shift. Park City Board of Realtors CEO Jennifer Armandi expects the market to retain that strength this year.
When you're in a resort community, there's always going to be a strong desire to want to be here. The combination of this, the summer and winter activities are going to attract nationwide buyers. I don't think we're going to see a decline in demand like we might see in other markets across the country.
Park City Realtors Board President Gretchen Hudgens said the area's school systems, philanthropic focus, and proximity to the Salt Lake City International Airport are also attractions. She said buyers are looking for a lifestyle when moving to the area, not just a job or a second home. Many buyers were from out of state looking for a full-time relocation.
What they're getting from this location. For them, it's really important that they are being able to utilize what's around them, including our golf courses, our lakes, and our trails.
Kohler said 2026 won't see as much growth as 2025, but is expected to be another strong year. However, there are new considerations for the 2026 buyer. This season's warm weather coincided with a drop in ski visits and rental income. Insurance costs are also increasing across the Wasatch Back with the need for more wildfire mitigation. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
On the phone now with a recap of yesterday's Summit County Council meeting, I have Council Chair Kenneth Hart. Good morning.
Good morning, Wesley.
Let's start with Junction Commons. The owners and potential redevelopers of the Outlet Mall at Kimball Junction presented their vision for a more walkable area yesterday. The conversation was more bird's eye view than nitty gritty. So what was your first impression of the project?
Yeah, it's a really interesting project. I think it's kind of it's split, sort of the first impression. One version of that is they want to do some infill project here that generally makes sense and it aligns with the neighborhood mixed use, the intent of it. It seems to hit it, you know, square on. So in one hand, you would say that's great. That's what we're looking for. And at the same time, you can't ignore the fact that, you know, the state just forced Kimball Dakota Pacific in there and that this would be another project on top of that. And for the life of me, I can't figure out how we're going to deal with all the traffic and the cars. So it's, you know, it's kind of a split personality at this point, but I think what they presented looked compelling.
All right. How will the overall changing landscape of Kimball Junction, do you think, affect this redevelopment?
That's the part that we'll have to see where each council person comes out. And this is, sorry to seem like, you know, a kind of split personality on it, but in one hand, you know, when you have a zone like we do with this neighborhood mixed use, that's a reflection of what we as a county desire, right? That's like, we want this, people apply for it. If it fits, you know, that usually means that that's a good thing. It's just this traffic issue and just the complete increase of density in the Kimball Junction area as a whole. We might have pause anyways, but that certainly is giving everybody pause right now as we contemplate this.
Yeah, so I'm guessing, I mean, does Dakota Pacific's project help or hurt this one? And can you even take that into account?
Well, that's the challenge. It's like, you know, you're supposed to not take it into account. And I, you know, I'm sure the council will follow the rules and, you know, have the procedure that we have to. But I don't know as a human how you would not take that into account. Even last night, and I'm sure we'll talk about the cemetery, but, you know, the people that were commenting there, their comments are also based on the Dakota Pacific and the changing landscape there. So I just don't see how anybody can ignore what's happening with Dakota Pacific.
Yeah, I believe that this is a proposed neighborhood mixed-use NMU-1 rezone. I think this is actually the first one that's being processed. Why haven't there been more successful NMU projects before?
Yeah, I mean, so this mixed-use, as you know, Leslie, having gone through, you know, the program and the planning department, but it has a requirement for 50% affordable housing. And what the developers tell us is that's too much. Like, they're always asking us to bring that down. And that's, at least that's what we've been told, is it requires too much. This project, because they would build the affordable housing up front, they get a slight reduction, but they're still at 47% of the project would be affordable. I should say for anybody listening who hasn't seen this project, it's worth taking a look at the images. As we think of the outlets, or what we referred to as the outlets in the past, you know, it's just a ring of buildings around a huge sea of parking. And I would imagine anybody would rather have this project than what's existing there, just because of the upgrades to the buildings and they get rid of the parking lots and they kind of fill it in with walkable space and things. So it really does meet the affordable housing need. And that seems to be the piece that others have not been able to. And it has a compelling, just like for those of us that live here, you know, we'd rather be in this new space than the existing space.
All right, moving on, High Valley Transit shared an update on the progress that it has building the bus rapid transit on State Route 224. So my understanding is construction starts early next month. What should the community expect this summer?
Well, they have a good plan. So I think what we're going to see is a very structured and easy to identify plan around the construction on 224. Yet, like all things in our area, you know, in the summertime, all the construction begins. So we're going to see a lot of the construction work on the west side of 224. They say that they're going to really pay attention to the rush hour, you know, commute traffic in and out. But I do expect that we're going to see some delays or disruptions as a result. But like anything, they'll kind of work through the summer and then we'll get back into the winter and they'll take a break again.
All right, so High Valley says that they're not going to be the only agency out there doing road work. What else is slated for this Kimball Junction area?
I don't know all the details of what else is there, but I know that UDOT is out there working on it. And I think predominantly what we see them doing in the beginning is working on a lot of the utility pieces of it and just making sure that they're I don't think you're going to see the road physically change much. I see you're going to see them digging it up and working underground and then filling back in, is my understanding.
All right. So we're not talking about the road widening efforts related to Dakota Pacific's approval?
Correct. That does not happen yet. That is slate. I'm not sure when that begins, but that is not a part of this.
All right. Last week, the county council agreed with the developer of the Canyons, TCFC, to build a BRT stop at Canyons Village. Does that lower the overall cost of the project now?
I wish. The BRT cost is significant. But it is a significant contribution from TCFC in that they're going to contribute up to $1 million towards the BRT stop, which, you know, I haven't seen final design details, but it sounds like that's a very significant contribution towards that. And I believe they may even take on the construction of it.
Mm. So what's the latest cost estimate? I think it was, last I heard, $109 million.
Yep, it is right there over $100 million. It's funny because it was couched to me at first. It's like, I have good news. It's only 109. And that is such a staggering number for me. It's hard to imagine. But they, we have, just remind everybody, there's a lot of state funding going into this. And in fact, they're going down looking for more state funding and federal transportation dollars. So I think they're asking for another $15 million from the state transportation next week. So I'll be speaking on their behalf there.
All right. Moving on, it sounds like the county council is one meeting away from voting on the new development agreement with Utah Olympic Park. You proposed a unique way forward, having council members email conditions to approve the agreement to create a final red line and forming a subcommittee. So what's this subcommittee for?
Well, particularly Councilmember Robinson would like to dig into the finances more. At least he wants to get a better understanding. And I think his intent is he'd like to make sure that the Utah Olympic Park is successful in their desire or their goals of like increasing their or decreasing their burn rate or increasing the revenue, depending on how you look at it. So that subcommittee is really going to be Councilmembers Robinson and McKenna, along with our attorney Dave Thomas, and they'll meet just to get a greater understanding. In the meantime, each council person we need to create conditions of approval, and then the council can vote. You know, they can vote yes or no, but you kind of need to know what you're voting on. And so the idea is just to email those to Dave Thomas separately so that he can then put them into the development agreement. And then we asked for just like a separate document, just like a Word document or PowerPoint slide that just summarizes what each of the council members added. I mean, everybody can read we'll get the full document, but you know, when you see those development agreements, they're huge and it's hard for people to understand where or what we added at first glance. That's what the summary document's for.
Yeah. I thought we heard earlier, though, that the attorney's office had said that the financials of a project can't be considered in part of approval. So what's changed?
I don't know that much has changed in the council, or at least for Councilmember Robinson. I think, you know, his desire to sort of push forward there. One of the things that when you have this latitude, when you have this legislative decision like an amended development agreement, the council is not obligated to approve it, and you can really take into consideration a wide range of inputs. And so if a council member decided they just didn't believe in the project or they didn't think it was, you know, viable, they can choose not to vote for it based on that. And so I think what Councilmember Robinson is doing is he wants to get more comfort if he's going to support it, and his way of doing that would be to get this information.
Okay, so are you happy with where the back gate policy landed, the emergency gate there?
I can speak for myself. I couldn't speak for the other council members. I will look to take more I'll just set it up to say is that road is a county road. Everybody has a right to use it. You can't limit that as much as a neighborhood would like. However, the same thing when it's a legislative decision like this, our role is to create offsets or to mitigate the impacts of that development. And I see that I have much more latitude than what it was proposed last night. So I personally will look to have more mitigations in there or a stricter policy around that gate.
So what's the county attorney's opinion on whether or not that should be emergency only, as you mentioned, the homeowners would like, or for public access, as the UOP says?
The county attorney, and you know, I'm sure the county attorney is correct. It's a county road. We cannot limit it. The exception here is just that it's a legislative decision, and we can choose to not amend the development agreement. So we could just say, no, we're just going to leave the development agreement as is. Everything stays status quo. But we can also say, if you would like us to amend the development agreement, then here's what we require to mitigate the impacts. And that's our vehicle, if you will, our opportunity to insert language that restricts the use of it.
All right. So what did Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation CEO Colin Hilton have to say about the nightly rentals in the agreement?
Yeah, he really, I think, two things. One, he provided clarification. The way I think the average person, we would think of nightly rentals, you know, when you go get a VRBO or something like that. He says they're not really using it like that. What they have right now is the building we all see kind of at the base of the ski jumps, which is this employee housing building. What they're doing is when they have an event in, like they have one right now, they'll do what they're calling, instead of a nightly rental, they call it a short-term rental. So it's kind of like, I'm not quite sure what the difference is as far as as they see the differences for 3 days or 4 days. It's like it's the coaches, it's the family, you know, it's attached to the event. They come in and that's where they stay. So they think of that as short-term rentals, not like I think what they're making the differentiation is a nightly rental to them is like, you know, a citizen from any place in the world sees a nightly rental and secures it. So they have some limited ability to do that. But for the most part, what they were trying to clarify is what they're really doing is these short-term rentals for family and coaching staff of athletes for events.
All right. So how much will these be used and marketed? I mean, are they exclusively for athlete short-term housing?
Yeah, it's not. I mean, I don't have the number right in front of me, Leslie, but the vast majority of the units that they have are used for the athletes. Mm-hmm. And it was a very small amount of it is used for nightly rentals. And I think the number is something like 29 is what the short-term rentals were.
Okay. When's the council vote scheduled on this for?
So we're going to go 2 weeks from yesterday. Mm-hmm. I believe that's April 1st. And that's when we'll have the conditions, which what we'll do is we'll make sure everybody is aware of what the conditions are the council has put into place. The applicant, of course, I should say the council will vote yes or no. And then ultimately the applicant can decide if they agree with our conditions or not. Doesn't mean we change them, but you know, if they could say no, we don't agree, and they just don't amend the development agreement, or they agree with it and they go forward from there. But we'll make sure that it's very clear to the public what these conditions are that we're putting in.
Okay, moving on, the council also held a public hearing with the Snyderville Basin Cemetery District about its new proposed location. It's along Bear Cuff Drive near the Bear Hollow neighborhood. Residents of there, of course, concerned about the choice. Others did speak in favor. So were you surprised by the mix of opinion?
Yeah, I think, personally, I think I was a little surprised. I suppose we shouldn't be, but, you know, initially a lot of comments were, you know, they didn't like the location. Actually, I would say there's a lot that opposed location, but there were also a good amount of those which were, we just need more time or more information. So they were initially opposed, but they kind of created this opportunity to have a more dialogue. And then, yeah, I was surprised. There was actually a pretty reasonable amount of people that said they were in favor of it. I'm not surprised that people are in favor of a cemetery. We've actually been asked. I know not everybody is into cemeteries, but actually quite a few people in our community are. So we had a fairly decent amount of comment. We were there quite late last night, but we made sure everybody had a chance to be heard.
Okay, this was not notice for possible action. You gave your approval as a council, but didn't seem like you took a vote. So did what happens here?
We didn't actually give an approval. It was more like what they were asking for was our consent to the county manager to be able to pursue a land transfer. It doesn't approve the project. So nothing was approved other than we signaled to the county manager, you have the authority to go talk to and potentially trade, you know, assign the land over.
All right. There, again, one comment about the traffic flows. The cemetery is being built around a possible future road that would connect Bear Cub to Olympic Parkway. So what do you think about that idea? Would that Bear Cub become another cut through for cars crowded on 224?
I think that would be a concern, but this is where the cemetery and the final plan of it has a ways to go. Bear Cub's a private road. So they proposed this road and this access from there, but they don't have the right to do that. So it's like one of these things where, you know, the cemetery board proposed this idea. People are providing comment or reacting to it, which I think would be appropriate, just like you're saying. But they actually don't even have the right to use that road at all. So they're going to have to come up with a different plan anyways.
Okay. Any discussion about Summit County taxpayers now having to foot the bill for an appeal from Corey Richens?
We did not have a discussion on that. That did not come up.
Okay. So if an appeal is filed, I mean, is that what would happen with the same as this trial, in which taxpayers are footing both the prosecution and the defense?
I don't have enough information on that one, but I could find out more information. Then the next time we're on, I'd be happy to address it.
Okay. Thanks so much, Candace. Anything else you want to mention?
No, but I like always, I really just invite anybody in the public to email the council if you have something. We read all of those emails. You can just go to the county website, and it has a link where you can email all the council at once. And thanks, Leslie, for having us on. We really appreciate it.
You bet. That's Summit County Chair Candace, Summit County Council Chair Candace Hart. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Joining me now on the phone from the Early Childhood Alliance, I have Director Kristen Schultz. Good morning, Kristen.
Good morning, Leslie.
So for listeners who may not be familiar, tell us what the role of the Early Childhood Alliance is and what problems you're trying to solve in Summit County.
Yeah, so we are part of the Park City Community Foundation, which has several what we call our deep impact initiatives. And so the Early Childhood Alliance focuses on improving outcomes prenatal through three. And we really believe every child deserves an equal opportunity to a quality educational foundation that prepares them to grow, learn, and succeed. And so we're focusing on all aspects that relate to early childhood.
Yeah. The Alliance is one of the programs that falls under the umbrella of the Park City Community Foundation. So tell us how that works.
Well, so the Park City Community Foundation has several overall programs. So in general, we are trying to support the nonprofit community in general. So a lot of people know about Live PC, Give PC. That's a program that we run in the fall every year to try to really activate our entire community to support all of the nonprofits that are in town that really work to make our community as great as it is. We have a ton of educational programs for nonprofits. We have a lot of philanthropic services that we provide to donors. And so I would say that overall mission of the Community Foundation is to improve our community overall. And then we have a few specific areas that we work in a more, I would say, direct way through our deeper impact initiatives. So, for example, zero food waste is one of our deep impact initiatives. We are working on a leadership lab where we're trying to educate people so that they're more prepared to be on boards. And so early childhood is one of these kind of deeper impact areas that we work on in addition to all of the general support that the Community Foundation provides.
All right. How would you describe the current childcare landscape locally? I mean, are things improving, getting worse, staying the same?
I think things are improving. I think we have two things to be really proud of in our town. We have local scholarships available through our county and city, which is really important for families to be able to afford childcare. We also are leading the state in terms of the preschool that is offered by the Park City School District, you know, offering full day 3- and 4-year-old preschool with before and after care is a fantastic option for many families where that's the best fit for them. But it's still just very difficult to afford high quality childcare. You know, here in the U.S., unlike other countries, we kind of leave parents on their own until kids are 5 before we have public support come in and pay for the K-12 education. So it is still very difficult to afford childcare in town, and yet I think we do have some things to be very proud of.
All right. So the Utah legislature approved House Bill 190. This allows Utah businesses to help employees with their child care cost, the business child care tax credit. So what exactly are those and how do they work?
Yeah, so I think this is really very exciting, and I hope a lot of businesses will learn about this. We are going to be working with the chamber to try to work out some educational opportunities, but basically I feel like these tax credits, and there is a federal one and now an enhanced state one, these are fantastic opportunities for businesses who want to invest in their workforce. So let me just give a quick recap of the federal one. So last summer, the Big Beautiful Bill expanded the federal tax credit. So what they do is they differentiate between employers who are small, and that's $32 million each year, and large. So if you're a small employer, you can get a 50% federal tax credit for investments that you make in your workforce's childcare. And those investments can take a variety of, there's a variety of opportunities. So you can offer an on-site childcare facility. You can contract directly with a childcare provider. And what is new this year is you can work with an intermediate entity that holds the contracts with one or more of the providers, which I think is going to be really beneficial for small employers who don't want to mess with doing this directly, right? You can hire someone that will basically take care of all of the administrative costs of providing high-quality childcare for your employers. So on the federal side, again, we've got 40% tax credit if you're small. I'm sorry, 40% tax credit if you're large, 50% if you're small. And then what the state did this year, and I'm really proud, again, of the county and the city for starting these discussions with the representative. And then the policy project came in and really helped advocate for it. But now on top of these federal tax credits, HB 190 provides a state tax credit. So again, if you're small, you get a 30% tax credit from the state for these same types of childcare investments. And if you're a large employer, you get 10%. So I know that's a little bit jargony, but in general, if you're a small employer, you can get a combined 80% federal and state tax credit for the investments that you make in your workers' childcare, which is fantastic.
Yeah. How do you define small versus large business?
So it's $32 million a year over the past 5 years, I think.
Okay. That's gross income. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
All right.
Yep. It's the modified gross receipt test, which the IRS, I think, uses for several things.
Okay. So we have heard, again, these proposals offering not just building daycare centers, but for subsidizing cares or partnering with providers. So is that limited in any way? I mean, does it have to be with PC Tots, or could it be with any child care facility in home?
So it does have to be, I'm sorry, there are a couple rules. So it does have to meet the regulations that are required of the state. So you could be licensed or license exempt, or, you know, there's a variety of levels of regulated child care. So you do need to be approved by the Department of Workforce Services. For example, if you're offering what we call family, friend, and neighbor care. You know, if you're paying, you know, your sister to take care of your children, you would need your sister to be approved by the state as a qualified or an approved provider. And that's primarily a background check and inspection, some pediatric CPR and first aid, and I think about 10 hours of online training. We really want to make sure the kids are safe when they're in care. One difference between the federal and the state one is the state one, the tax credit only applies to centers that are licensed centers based in Utah. So that is a little bit of a difference between the federal and the state one. But in general, if you're using any licensed provider, particularly if you're using a center, you would be eligible for these tax credits.
Okay. So tell us how you're going to be working with the chamber to get this information out, or more than that?
Yeah. So we haven't figured it all out. We do have a blog post on our website just giving a little bit more information about these tax credits. I think we're going to work with some smaller kind of focus groups to try to learn from employers. You know, what barriers do you see? How can we help you learn more? And then I hope that I'm actually trying to find some CPAs who specialize in this, and hopefully we'll be able to provide some type of lunch and learn or event where people can come and learn more.
Great. All right. The Early Childhood Alliance has also helped bring the Best Place for Working Parents program to the region. So what's that designation, and why does it matter?
Yeah. So, and again, huge thanks to the Park City Chamber of Commerce. They are working with us on this. We launched this last May. This is a national program where employers take a self-assessment. There are 10 evidence-based policies that they are asking employers questions about. And then depending on which policies you implement, and they rank you by the size of the employer you are and also by the industry you are in. But based on your answers to this survey, you can earn this badge, which lets you tell both your current employees and also as you're hiring, you know, that you are a best place for working parents. And so, for example, some of these policies are whether or not you offer health care to your employees, whether you have paid time off, whether you have nursing benefits, right? Whether you do have any type of child care assistance. And so it's a program both allows us to educate employers about family-friendly policies and then also recognize those that are really a great place for working parents. So please, if you're an employer listening, we would love you to go ahead and take the self-assessment. It's at best place for working parents with a four, .com. And also, there is no downside to taking it. You know, if you do not earn the badge, that information is not released publicly. And so it's a good idea to go ahead and, you know, see where you are now. If you don't earn the badge, perhaps you could think about making some changes in your policies, take the assessment again, and then, you know, proudly display the badge if you earn it.
Have you seen any early success stories from companies that have gone through the program?
Yeah, we actually, Alpine Distilling was recently featured on the National Best Place for Working Parents website. And I do think it is important for employers, and we have several local employers who have earned the badge, and I see several who put it in their email, you know, on their signatures. And so I do think it becomes part of the culture, I think, if we as a community and we as an employer community, you know, say that it's important to us to support our working parents. And so I do think we've had some limited success during the first year. I would really like to see it expand in the second year, and we actually have expanded it so that employers throughout Utah can take the assessment.
Okay, and I guess just looking ahead, Kristen, any other policy changes that you hope to see come from the Utah legislature?
You know, this year we also expanded the child tax credit, which is great, but I really would love to see it be refundable. Right now, the $1,000 tax credit that's provided by the state is non-refundable, and which means our lowest income families aren't able to benefit from it because they don't have the tax liability to offset it. So I think that was very important. I would really love to see maternity leave amendments. We had a little bit of some improvement this past session, but you know, that is one of the most evidence backed ways to really have a strong start for children. And so I'd love to see continued improvements there. And I also, there is also a federal tax credit, which is 45S as in Sam, to provide credits for if you offer paid leave for paternity leave. And I'd love to see the state do a matching tax credit on that as well.
All right. Anything else, Kristen, you wanted to mention?
No, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
No, thank you. Kristen Schultz, again, is the director of the Early Childhood Alliance. This Sunday and next, Park City's Velvet Room invites you to enjoy a night of Sunday sing-along. On the phone with details, I have pianist Rich Wyman along with Mike Rogers, who perform as the Tipsy Ivories Dueling Pianos. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Good morning, Leslie.
Mike, let's start with you, and maybe you can just tell us what Velvet Room is, where it's located, and how all of this came about.
The Velvet Room is, Rich was the one that was approached by Bryce Clark, the owner of Velvet Room. If Rich, you want to tell him a little bit about it?
Sure.
Sorry.
Well, it's in the space under the cabin, Leslie, you know, across from Flanagan's. That's in the old veterans building. That's now the marquee upstairs, and the Velvet Room is downstairs. And Bryce came to me back in December and told me that he was taking over the place and that he wanted to talk to me about playing. And I told him I was very busy touring all over the country this winter. In fact, I'm calling you from Texas. I said, well, you know, my friend Bryce, Mike Rogers is a local piano player as well. I said, we could do a dueling piano show for you, and I could fly home every Sunday and do it. So that's what I do. I fly home every Sunday, and Mike and I play every Sunday. We do a dueling piano show from 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock every Sunday.
All right. So tell us how it works with both of you on stage. I mean, are you collaborators, competitors, or, I mean, are you both playing at once or one at a time?
We're definitely collaborators. The dueling pianos is more in the audience. So the fun thing I tell people about it, our show is we never know what we're going to play. Each night is a blank slate, and we put request forms and pens on all the tables, and the people in the audience come up to the stage and put the request forms on the stage, and we pick them up and put them on the pianos, and we play these songs. Sometimes they're songs that we get every night, like Sweet Caroline or Piano Man or things like that. And some nights people surprise us, and they'll challenge us and make us have to dig deep. And we go back and forth, so we alternate songs. So Mike will play a song, I'll play a song, and we back each other up. So if it's my song, Mike will kind of do like rhythm piano and sing background vocals, then I'll sing lead vocals and be like the lead pianist, and then we switch. And we do fun things like we'll bring people up on stage for different songs if it's somebody's birthday or anniversary, or if it's, we never know. The nights are unpredictable. It's not scripted. There is no set list. The audience decides what we play, and they also decide what we don't play.
All right. Well, next question was going to be, what's the most annoying request you get? My guess would be Piano Man or Sweet Caroline. And you mentioned both of those, but you didn't say annoying, but those are the top two, huh?
Yeah, I got it. I mean, it's everybody's personal opinion. Personally, I'm a Billy Joel fan. I don't mind Piano Man. I'm not a Neil Diamond fan. I do get annoyed with Sweet Caroline. And I'll just literally go over to Mike and put it on his piano if I get it, and ask him to play it, because I that song annoys me.
Bum, bum, bum. Okay, we had it. What, Mike, are some of the most wildest or memorable requests you've received?
There's so many times people will come in and also love to do their anniversary songs, so their first wedding dance songs, and people... You know, the show really is so much fun for people to come back to every year. They come with groups and they have like their songs, or they have an event or their birthday party. And we really try and cater to playing music that brings back a lot of memories, you know, and it's a lot of the old favorites, I would say my most annoying song that I do is probably Sweet Caroline or any of the Jimmy Buffett stuff.
All right. How about you, Rich? Any memorable or wild requests that you've received?
Oh, yeah. People do throw a lot of surprises at us. Some people ask for Tool, which is extremely heavy progressive rock. And unfortunately, that's just not in my repertoire. Also, people ask for a lot of rap songs. And it's funny how people ask for a lot of pretty crude rap songs. And they will come up on stage and dance. That's pretty challenging for me because I really didn't grow up listening to rap. So I don't really do a lot of rap. And I don't know why people ask for piano players to play rap, but they do. Bohemian Rhapsody is always one of my favorites just because it's so complex. And, you know, ever since I was a kid, I love getting people to sing along. And that's just one of my favorite things to do. I love getting a room full of people singing at the top of their lungs. So I love doing Bohemian Rhapsody. I love doing Don't Stop Believing. I love doing Brown Eyed Girl, you know, classics like that, Great Balls of Fire. These are all songs that everybody sings at the top of their lungs. They get up on their feet. And that's what I like the most.
Yeah. You both have been playing so long, I'm guessing you have so many songs memorized. But, I mean, how does it work? You have, like, an iPad with all of the chords for pretty much every song? Or how does that work?
Go ahead.
Yeah, if there's a song that I don't know, I have a tablet on the piano, just in case it's a song that I don't have off the top of my head. And I do a quick Google search. I type in the name of the song and the word chords, and you'll get a a myriad of website links. Ultimate Guitar is the first one that comes up. I usually click on that. And the lyrics with the letter names of the chords over them come up above. So you have to be able to play by ear. And you have to have an idea of how the song goes. So sometimes I will pick up my iPhone and put on Apple Music and put the song in and listen to it real fast. And I have literally played, the other night I played three songs that I had never heard before in my life. And I listened to the song as I'm reading the lyrics, looking at the chords, while the other guy's playing the song. And then I'll say, hey, folks, I'm going to play a song I've never heard before. Let's see how it goes. And sometimes I hit it out of the park, and sometimes I fall on my face. But either way, it's fun.
Yeah. How about you, Mike?
Exactly. I did the exact same thing. Some of my most memorable songs that I love doing the dueling piano show are like The Devil Went Down to Georgia, and dueling banjos, and some of the back and forth bits. When Rich and I originally started playing, we've been playing for so long, and all of the big songs we really like to share the verses. We go back and forth, and I do love the ability to people will throw us songs that we do not know, and that's the challenge and what makes the show so exciting, because it's such an interactive show. The Velvet Room is it's a great speakeasy. You know, it's very cozy feel in there. And what happens is, there's a song I don't know, I'll try and listen to it. I'll also set it up just like Rich will, and I will ask the person or the group that requested it to help sing it. You know, it's such a fun thing, because people really want to sing along and be part of the show, and that's the most important thing. With Rich's killer keys that he has on tour, and all the other things that we do, Velvet Room is just a really nice space to create that feel.
Okay, so. If you had to name one song, Mike, what would be your signature song?
Signature song, I would say Tiny Dancer is one of my biggest ones.
Okay, how about for you, Rich?
Tiny Dancer, American Pie always brings the house down.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you had to challenge each other right now, what song would you pick for the other to play, Rich?
Challenge each other? I would ask Mike to sing a Tiny Tim song.
Okay.
Probably Carry On Your Wayward Soul.
Okay. All right.
From Kansas.
So again, as I mentioned, I think just two more shows into the end of March. Will the show restart this summer, or?
So it looks like we have two shows left with our winter residency. But I guess you can go to the velvetroomparkcity.com. Sundays, standing room only in advance. Reservations are recommended. Bryce did want me to mention that, and he is the owner-operator, there is going to be, in the upcoming spaces, a new space. So the current location is going to end in April, but we're going to continue doing the events and different shows in a new space that isn't public yet, but will be very shortly.
Okay. Is there a cover charge?
No.
Okay. But you do need to make an advance reservation if it's standing room only. So, yeah, fire code.
Yeah, it gets there. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, guys. I'm about out of time. Thanks so much for your time. Have fun.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you, Leslie.